Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we have an incredible story. Our guest today is Jonah Bays. Jonah is the president of J.B. Fitzgerald Venture Capital and the founder and president of Combine Enterprises. But what does that mean, and how did this whole story start? Anyone who knows Jonah knows he has a little hustle in him. Okay, maybe a lot of hustle. There's the rumor that when he was a basketball player at Clemson, he made thousands and thousands of dollars selling his student football tickets and parking passes. Or the one about how he never spent a dollar of his per diem over the course of a four-year career as a student athlete. But after a brief coaching career, Jonah started his biggest hustle of all, Combine Academy.
For every, 500 no's, I got a yes. And so, I really had to hit students in volume and mass contact a lot of different potential clients. And we got it done. $160,000 in revenue our first year. A couple students paid up front in August. Their full tuition, $13,000 up front. And we took that money and we flipped it. We budgeted it. We bought a van. We got our housing. We got our jerseys. And then Combine's underway.
Jonah Bays joins us today to tell us how his training business turned into a prep school, which turned into a vast real estate portfolio, which turned into J.B. Fitzgerald Venture Capital. We hope you enjoy today's podcast. Please subscribe, write us a review, and please follow along with what we are doing at risingcoaches.com. Before we get into today's episode, I want to take a minute to tell you about the Rising Coaches Association. Since 2010, Rising Coaches has put on unbelievable events, and people would always ask us, how do we get involved with Rising Coaches? What can we do to help the cause? And to be honest, we never really had a good answer until now. Sign up today for the Rising Coaches Association and become a part of our community and our network. You will receive exclusive content and you will make genuine connections to others in the coaching profession that will help you both personally and professionally. Visit risingcoaches.com/membership and sign up today. Jonah, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing amazing. I'm doing amazing, Gordo. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on the podcast. What are we doing today? Are we looking at investment properties? Are we at the campus? Are we in the downtown skyrise? What's on the agenda for today?
Man, I'm back and forth, obviously, with my direction and my focus every day. But on Thursdays, I'm actually at our downtown office here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I spend Tuesday and Thursday at our downtown office, which manages most of our investments. And then Monday, Wednesday, Friday out at the Combine Academy campus in Lincolnton.
Okay, great. So you got some – I like how you're organized like that. So you break up your week where you dedicate a couple days to this and a couple days to that. Which I love, and I want to get into the Combine stuff a little bit later, but maybe we could start by you telling us just briefly about where you got started, maybe starting with college with Clemson or how you got to Clemson with your basketball background.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So born and raised Southern Indiana in Evansville. So I'm a proud Purple Aces fan. Just saw they just beat off Kentucky, just knocked off Kentucky. So that was exciting to see. That said, we actually have a former alumni that plays for them and from Combine Academy that was a part of that big victory. But born and raised in Evansville, Indiana, I transitioned my senior year to play high school basketball in Asheville to get further exposure for a legendary high school coach named John Jordan. And from there, I went on to walk on at Clemson. I kind of finagled my way into a walk-on position, attaching myself to a 7'2" Romanian player in Bobo Baciu.
Bobo.
And him and I, yeah, Bobo. Yep, yeah, you remember Bobo, you coached him. So we attached together and ended up committing together and enrolling together. And then I started my 4 years at Clemson in 2007. And, fast forward to today, it's really helped me to get to where I'm at. Just seeing that environment, being in that collegiate, high-level, high ACC environment, it was definitely a big-time pillar to get me where I'm at today.
Okay, let's go back and talk about Coach Jordan for a minute, because I know he had a huge impact on you. And I want you to tell us about them, but first I'm going to tell you like my experience with them because it's limited. But like, you know, I was at the age, I was really young, just trying to like break into coaching, and I'd be out on the road, you know, at various recruiting events, and I'd come across Coach Jordan, and like he was a legend. Like everybody knew who he was. I didn't know him, you know, at a deep personal level, but you could just tell, or at least from my outside perspective, he seemed like a guy that just, you know, obviously his life was basketball and made a career out of it. But more importantly, just like looked like he just grinded his way through like the years and just continued to find different ways to reinvent himself, give back to kids and different programs, and just constantly like thriving in that lifestyle, and was always, you know, very impressed by that. But I know he was really, really close to you, and you know, it's really cool because now you've named your gym after him at Combine. But maybe you could tell us just a little bit about him.
Yeah, so Coach Jordan, I mean, amazing mentor, amazing person, you know, overall, a man of the people. So he, you know, he's a self-starter, entrepreneur. You know, a lot of coaches possess those entrepreneurial types of spirits, but, you know, he had an abnormal way of going about the business, and he's a very eccentric individual. You know, he's very different, you know, and didn't, you know, care to speak his mind, and he was all about the students and the college placement, and, you know, competing at a super high level, you know, working his way into different environments, into, you know, national level tournaments, into national games with Oak Hill Academy and Hargrave Military Academy, when he was just, you know, operating and managing and coaching a small private school that probably shouldn't have been there. But he had a way with words, a way with people, a huge networker, and he had an abnormal way of going about things. You know, I've got a ton of different stories of Coach Jordan. He was actually my host father. So I stayed in his house my senior year in high school, and I learned everything that I know today. And that's made me successful today from him, and just watching him navigate through certain situations and communicate and get things done. But you're talking about a guy that would apply for a private school job. And, you know, everyone and their brother has always taught us, especially at the collegiate level, you should always have a one pager resume. But he'd come in with a binder. He'd have about 45 pages, you know, exploiting all of his previous coaching jobs. And he'd come in and just thrash his interviews. He'd just do a tremendous job of connecting with the athletic director, connecting with the head of school, on an individual level, on a personal level. And he just had a way with words. And so, you know, I watched him go throughout his career and start, you know, from the bottom and then work his way up to the National High School Division, you know, get really tight with Calipari and Coach Krzyzewski and Roy Williams and all those guys. And they saw him as like a sought after source for high level players. And, you know, just like that abnormal resume situation where, you know, he was doing things a whole lot differently than the next applicant, you know, he also saw talent differently. So, whenever he first started his career, he was more on the professional side, and he actually discovered Chris Birdman Anderson. And so Birdman came to one of his pro camps. He had free agent camps in South Dakota. And Chris Anderson came to one of those camps, and he was frolicking up and down the court like a deer, Coach Jordan said. And he said, you know, he was unsigned at this point. This is before he was in the NBA or doing anything. It was a secondary league that he was trying out for that Coach Jordan actually created, called the XBL, where a dunk was 3 points. And he noticed Birdman, and he immediately took a liking to him, signed him as his first ever agent of Birdman, and kind of initiated his career, had him play for a season there, and learned a bunch of stories about him. Birdman's mom told Coach Jordan that he was conceived on the back of a motorcycle. So, you know, Coach Jordan just had a tremendous amount of stories, man. It was kind of amazing. And so he discovered Birdman, you know, went on throughout his journey, actually discovered Hassan Whiteside at a Sean Wiseman basketball camp in Charlotte whenever he had no offers and nowhere to go before he went on to Marshall. And, you know, he was a guy that would see talent, you know, when no one else would. He'd take a stab at it. He wasn't scared, you know, to voice his opinion and to be wrong and you know, to fail. And, And he was just an all-around great guy, man. So just learning that and seeing him navigate through with his way of living and, you know, not changing for anyone was definitely inspirational.
Did you know that year after living with him that you wanted to go down a similar career path?
You know, we went down a similar career path. So you're exactly right. I did, man. I just saw what he was able to do. So it wouldn't matter if Coach Jordan walked into, you know, a mixer at the country club with all the top executives in the city and, you know, the political leaders and all those people. You know, he'd walk in, you know, dressed a little differently, not real sharp, but, you know, just in his clothes that fit him well. And he'd work the room, man. And you'd think he was Donald fucking Trump, you know, but like, for me, I just saw that, and I just followed behind him throughout, you know, that time. And I saw how he was able to finesse certain situations, and, you know, and he did that in every aspect of life. He was a communicator, he's a huge social butterfly. And I saw, you know, the reward that he reaped from that and what the way he set his family up. And so, you know, I started to develop those characteristics myself, those communication skills, the confidence. And you know, I never knew what I wanted to do myself, not even in college. You know, I thought I knew what I wanted to do, but that changed multiple times. But really it started to come together post-college for sure.
So after college, you did kind of have a brief stint in coaching. And I imagine that was for a brief time. You thought that was a career path you wanted to go down. And like how soon into it did you realize that this wasn't, you know, exactly what you wanted to do, and you were more interested in, you know, the entrepreneurial lifestyle and the venture capitalist, you know, path?
Man, pretty quickly. You know, I had a difficult time at the college level. I was with a great staff, a great leader in Coach Brad Brownell at Clemson. You know, I felt very awarded whenever I was offered that position there as the graduate assistant coach. It's one of the best graduate assistant, you know, coaching roles, especially on paper in the country. And, you know, whenever Brad, my former coach, my senior year, asked me to come back and take that role, you know, I was very honored by that. I was excited. I went back and I spent 2 months starting in August there just grinding, man. He had me in a position where, you know, I wasn't a traditional, you know, graduate assistant coach. I had a lot of responsibility. I had a lot of ability to be vocal. I could do scouting reports. I could give input and halftime adjustments. But something happened to me while I was there in October, 2 years in or 2 months in. My father actually ended up with a brain hemorrhage and got extremely sick. Chances of dying were 85%. And so I had to go home for a month and basically live in the hospital back in Evansville with my father during the season, right at the heart of preseason and whenever we started games. And I went and I met with Brad and I told him, you know, my dad's real sick. I got to fly out today. I found out this morning. And, you know, Brad, ironically, he's from Evansville, Indiana as well as his father. He went to a rival high school of mine. But he said, Jonah, family's first, you know, go handle your business. And even though I had a lot of responsibility and they were relying on me, he basically said, you know, go handle your shit. And so I dipped out that day. I went back home. I spent 5 weeks in the hospital next to my father. My father miraculously recovered, you know, tremendously, but it really weighed on me big time. And, you know, while Brad was super accommodating and the rest of the staff, when I came back, I looked at the hours, I looked at the commitment, I looked at, you know, just the overall scope. You know, college coaching is not a 9-to-5. A 9-to-5 is a dream compared to college coaching, especially if your heart's not in it, because college coaching is a 6-to-11, you know, you're going nonstop and then you go home and you sleep. And so for me, I looked at all those things and I saw, you know, my father potentially, you know, in a, you know, unhealthy situation, just a bad medical situation. And I thought, I can't keep doing this. I've got to start something that allows for me not to be restricted, for me not to be, you know, tied down, for me to have flexibility and freedom, you know. So that kind of did it for me. I finished the season strong. You know, I can't thank Brad enough for giving me that flexibility and being so respectful about it. he was, you know, him and I developed a lifelong bond that year. And, you know, and I'm super appreciative of that. But I quickly discovered that it wasn't for me, man. It was not for me. I needed to get out of that environment for sure.
So how soon after you leave Clemson do you start Combine Academy?
So it was pretty quick, man. So going into Clemson, my college roommate, college teammate, and lockers, you know, adjacent to one another was Trevor Booker. So Trevor is one of the best, you know, Clemson all-time greats. And he ended up getting drafted in 2010 to the Washington Wizards. And he spent the first 4 years of his career with the Wizards, the next 2 years, 5 and 6, with Utah, and then he finished up Brooklyn, Indiana, and Philly. And you know, and so I hit Trevor up. You know, I basically practiced the John Jordan mentality, and I just started hitting up my network. And of course, you know, Trevor was my best friend, you know, at the time and still is. And so I hit him up, and he was finishing up his season right around we were finishing up at school down there. And he said, "I'm moving to Charlotte. And, you know, you should come up and live with me and train me and et cetera, et cetera." And while I was at Clemson, you know, I've always been a hustler. When I was younger, I was, you know, selling blank CDs that I ripped and burned, all the hottest new albums, and selling some used cars here and there, mowing lawns and all that, just to make passive income. And so while I was at Clemson, I was training. I had a big group of kids that I was training in the, you know, Seneca Central and Clemson area. And so I just decided to move to Charlotte and continue doing that, but build it up bigger. So I moved to Charlotte. I stayed in Trevor's loft and his house, his summer house that he was on a 3-month lease with his family. And we gelled well. It was an amazing experience. I trained Trevor every day, but then I also started to pick up several new clients. Deron Washington from Virginia Tech, who's a EuroLeague player as we speak. Sean James, who was drafted in the NBA draft. I can't recall the year, but he's a EuroLeague champion. Ricky Hickman, EuroLeague champion, a bunch of local guys, Anthony Morrow, all those guys in the local Charlotte area. And I just decided, you know, I was going to do the training thing. So I opened up, you know, the training camp, and, you know, got me a few dozen students to jump on board, got me a dozen pro clients to market the puppy. And then I just finagled gyms and just found ways to get into gyms for, you know, next to nothing or free. And started training all these guys out of the trunk of my car.
Isn't it crazy how much like the Clemson connection, like, is how strong it is in the basketball world? Like, if you think about all the dudes that came out of Clemson just the years that we were there, and you were there longer than I was, but there's so many guys that are coaching college, coaching pro, playing. I mean, do you think that's like every high major program, or do you think Clemson's a little unique with the number of guys that are still making careers out of basketball?
I mean, it's unique. It's as unique as it gets. Not even a minority of high major programs have that type of network and success with shifting, you know, coaches on. I don't know what it is. There's something in the water down there. But, I mean, you're talking about Shaka Smart, you know, obviously everyone knows Shaka Smart at Texas. You're talking about even strength coaches like Preston Green, who's now, you know, one of the highest level strength coaches in the country down at Florida. Strength coaches like John Sanderson, who went on to Michigan. Head coaches like Rick Ray, who went on to Mississippi State and is now at SEMO. I mean, you know, obviously the Rising Coaches Network. You guys are the leaders in, you know, college coaching placement and advising, and you know, that was originated at Clemson. And so, I mean, it's amazing, man. Andy Farrell, Trey Meyer, you know, you got UNC Asheville, Mike Morrell, yeah. All the managers.
Will Wade.
All the assistants. Yeah, Will Wade at LSU. It's amazing, man. I've never seen anything like it. And every time I interview a coach for our school right now, I always spew off the Clemson connection because it's just invaluable. I mean, I don't know what it is, but something has occurred there in Clemson that really cultivates these coaches to not only have the confidence to move on, but the connections, the relationships, and the understanding of how to attain jobs. And I think it really starts with you guys, man, and your organization. You guys putting on these events, bringing in these leaders in the industry, to come in and speak about how you attain jobs, how you keep jobs, you know, the ups and downs. I think the Rising Coaches has a tremendous amount to do with that, but it's amazing, man, all these guys that have shifted on and transitioned to these high level, you know, roles at the Division I level.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but it was going on long before we got there with the guys that you mentioned, like Ashaka and Kevin Nickelberry and Will Wade. I mean, those guys all were there before we were there. But
absolutely. And I think what you guys did, man, is you guys saw a trend, you know, you're seeing all your buddies and, you know, all your coworkers shift on, you know, to the college level. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you and Trey and Andy probably sat down and said, hey, let's double down on this, man. Let's create a company around this. Let's create a movement and let's give others opportunity. And, you know, and I think, you know, that was amazing that you guys kind of thought, you know, you guys sought out that trend, you saw it, you identified it, and then you doubled down on it. It was kind of ingenious for sure.
Well, we talk about this a lot. Like, if we tried to do that, you know, start Rising Coaches and we didn't have the Tiger Paw logo on our polos, like, I'm not sure it takes off like it did, you
right,
know,
right.
People, even though like I'm the same dude, like, people look at you different when you got that ACC logo on your shirt than they do when you got like a Big South logo or a JUCO logo or whatever. So we definitely like cashed in on it while we were there and at that point of our careers.
1,000%.
Okay. So you've got your training business going in Charlotte. You've built up your clientele. Trevor Booker, your best friend, are you guys officially business partners at this point, or you're just kind of training them? Like, how soon after that do you go into like actual business and start building up the Combine brand?
Right. So we started out, you know, I was just freelancing. I was third partying it. Didn't even have an entity set up. You know, and so I basically was just running all this revenue through, you know, my personal, which is obviously completely legal. And, you know, you're basically seen as an independent contractor, but, you know, a couple months in, you know, I think Trevor and I both looked at each other and we saw the type of impact I was making. And, you know, and it helps obviously to be able to promote these high level NBA guys and EuroLeague guys. You know, I'd have them, you know, in a workout right before my workout with the youth started. So they'd all get to, you know, mingle together and all that. And so we looked at each other and we said, damn, this is blowing up. And so we started to, right from the living room of his summer house, create a brand and create a company. And we said, how can we monetize this? And, you know, kind of rewinding just real briefly, but my first year out of college, you know, I did not take that GA spot. I actually went to play overseas, but in between that, I started a prep school with John Jordan, my high school coach that we spoke about, called ABI, American Basketball Institute. And that was very successful. We ran it for 1 year, we monetized it, and then we sold it for $60,000. And so, you know, obviously very low check size, very small check size, but it gave me some money in my pocket. It also gave me proof of concept. And the only reason I sold it is because I got the job at Clemson. Had I stuck with it, you know, I probably would have built that entity up to where Combine is now. But I got the job at Clemson and we decided to sell. And so, you know, Trevor and I looked at each other and we said, listen, let's create the same thing that was uber successful. And let's figure out how to monetize it even more. So instead of just the training and just being able to charge and have a revenue stream for training, we said, let's do schooling and then let's do housing and let's do meals. And all of those different aspects we were able to monetize and run with. And so, you know, we sat down in the living room, fold out table. You know, that was my office. And I'm just busting my ass at this point. You know, this is survival time. Nobody's given me a handout. Trevor's never given me a dime. We have too good of a relationship for that to occur. And so, you know, I'm just self-starting it. And he's given me tremendous support, tremendous ideas. And, you know, we come up with a list of 40, 50, 60 names that we could call this company. And we land on Combine, you know, for various different reasons. So we end up branding it, incorporating it, and calling it Combine Basketball, and primarily because we were looking to be very heavily into the international space, bringing student athletes from overseas, from a ton of different countries, because it just opened it up our marketing pool. And so for one reason, we called it Combine because we're combining all of those different cultures together. We're also combining academics with athletics, with career development. And we wanted to kind of play off of the combine NBA pre-draft testing and kind of have that aspect as well, where we're very focused on analytics and data and measurables. And so, you know, we came up with the name about 2 months after I was doing my freelance training, and we said, let's monetize it. So at this point, we had no clue. I mean, I didn't have a clue how to start a company, how to do accounting, you know, how to file the articles of incorporation, how to get a tax ID, how to open a bank account for a business. But you know, I just started tapping my resources and, you know, finding different attorneys, different accountants, different advisors to give me that direction. And we started that first entity called Combine Basketball LLC in a suburb of Charlotte called Matthews, North Carolina.
Okay, so what year is that, Jonah?
That was 2013.
Okay, so 2013, and you go from training to now branding Combine. And are you guys like a prep school at this point? Like, do you bring in enough people to field a team, or is it still just like a training academy?
Right. So I'll tell you exactly how we started. So we ended up July of 2013. We ended up branding this puppy, and I just knew, you know, the terms of the academic school year for other postgraduate institutes and prep schools. So we got our website together, and we basically just started off with postgrad because, you know, we weren't an accredited high school. We didn't want to go down that route that a lot of other, you know, illegitimate schools were going down, where they were offering academics and, you know, core classes and things of that nature without being an actual accredited and registered institution. So we just started with postgrad. So the only academic offerings we offered were SAT prep, ACT prep, TOEFL prep for the international students, and then college reading, writing, and basically life skills for college. And so, you know, that was a 3 or 4 hour, you know, curriculum on a daily basis. But we started just with a group of postgraduate students and heavily international. So I started recruiting for this in July of 2013 with our enrollment, our first day, our inaugural season, in October 1st of 2013. So I had my hands full. You know, I had about 3 months to fill up a roster, and our goal was to hit 12, you know, just the traditional basketball roster. And I remember, you know, I every day I'd just be on the phone. I got 12 students within a matter of about 6 weeks. We put together a great website. The only thing that we invested in was our website. That's the only money that we expended on this venture, $2,500 to a really reputable website developer. And I put everything on paper, you know, the tuition, the facilities. I went out and I contracted the gyms, you know, I'll explain the housing here momentarily, but what I was able to do is put all that marketing online. And then that went live at the end of July. And then I just started mass emailing, you know, networking, calling high school coaches. And we ended up, you know, with 12 students. We had students from 7 different countries, 2 students from Dubai, student from Ireland, all over Europe, Australia, Canada. And then I had a couple local Charlotte students and a couple students from California as well. And so very, very culturally diverse. But, you know, these students, some of them visited and they saw our amenities, our facilities, and we were able to just make it happen. But, you know, the biggest challenge with that was, you know, just the nonstop, you know, getting told no, because it's so late. You know, students, we're in July, we're in August. Students are already enrolling in college, you know, that have just finished high school. And that was our primary clientele. So, you know, it really just took a lot of time. For every, you know, 500 no's, I got a yes. And so, you know, I really had to hit students in volume and mass contact a lot of different potential clients, and we got it done. $160,000 in revenue our first year. A couple students paid up front in August, their full tuition, $13,000 up front, and we took that money and we flipped it. We budgeted it. We bought a van. We got our housing. We got our jerseys, and then Combine's underway for sure.
Okay, this is crazy. All right, so just the whole like your daringness to go out and start something like this, sell it, and you get the kids in, which gives you the money to basically function. You're renting gyms, right? You guys don't have a gym of your own, but you're probably renting different spaces in Charlotte. You buy a van. Where are you housing the kids?
So that was the unique piece, because that's always been the biggest challenge and still is even to this day, is basically your housing inventory. And so, you know, at this point, all these students were paying deposits in advance. You know, that was in our enrollment documents. You have to pay a deposit in advance. If you pay up front your full tuition as opposed to a monthly payment plan, you're going to get a 20% additional scholarship. And that's what we got with those deposits, those $13,000 deposits. They were full installments on their tuition in August, 2 months before the season even started. And we didn't know what we're going to do for housing. I approached multiple apartment complexes, tried to rent a bunch of different single family homes, and I wasn't able to get someone amenable to allow for underage students. Some are 18, some are 17, some are 20, to live together. And then you also can't have one or two to a room, or it just doesn't financially make sense. So I couldn't get, you know, one of these apartment complexes to allow me to have, you know, six students in a two-bedroom apartment, even though that would be, you know, a decent living space for those students. They wouldn't allow for it. So we went back to the burner, and I basically started to develop a relationship with Trevor's landlord at the time. So Trevor was on a three-month lease in basically a mansion in Ballantyne, and right near Matthews in North Carolina here, right outside of Charlotte, 20 minutes from downtown. And his landlord used to come over and cut the grass. And he was a very wealthy individual. He's in the stock market in New York. And I thought, man, you know, this house has six bedrooms. We got 12 students. It would allow for an RA room. It would allow for a ton of space, you know, for them to have common areas. It has a pool, a jacuzzi, a grill. You know, it was an elite setup. And so I basically went to the landlord and I said, hey, listen, Trevor's moving out. I know you need another tenant. Trevor's paying you right now $2,500 a month. We're going to have a little bit more foot traffic in your property. And I was just upfront with him. I was very transparent. I said, listen, we have an international company that we're creating. We're bringing students from all over the world. This guy was originally from Greece, fluent in Greek and, you know, almost fluent in English. And so he respected that. We also had a Greek assistant coach that I was able to help me broker the communication. And I told him, listen, I know you're probably worried about damages. It's a beautiful home, but I'll pay you the first 3 months. We needed a 6 month lease because our program was 6 months, October 1st to the end of March. Pay the first 3 months in advance, $9,000. We had the money in the bank because we had prepayments for tuition. And then halfway through the year at Christmas time, January 1st, I'll pay you the other $9,000. And you'll be paid in full. If we have any damages, I'll give you a $5,000 deposit that you can take away. And he took about a day, spoke with his wife, and he said, done. And we got that done about 2 weeks before the students arrived. You know, I was obviously extremely sweating. When some of the students came to visit, we took them by apartments that, you know, were really nice, but not as nice as the house. So we knew if we made this adjustment, we'd be able to explain to the parents, hey, we have an even better situation. We upgraded our living situation. And, you know, 2 weeks out, you know, me, my two assistant coaches, my head coach that we hired, we staged the property, you know, bought, you know, 15 bunk beds and, you know, had our RA room outfitted, mounted our TVs, made our common areas and just started to rock and roll.
Okay. So that's what I was going to ask you. I was just going to ask, is this you by yourself with 12 kids from all over the world in Charlotte in a used van? Or did you at this point have some help? It sounds like you used some of that money to find some staff. So you're
exactly,
not doing this solo.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So it took me a couple months to bring those revenues in. But once those revenues came in, I posted several ads for coaches and brought in a head coach, you know, paid him a very, very low wage. Our first ever head coach at Combine was making $800 a month. And free housing. And, you know, and he was excited, you know, because it was an opportunity and it was something new that you could build and have your hands on.
And so how many years did you operate like this, where you're renting the housing, you're renting out gyms, and just kind of making it work?
So from 2013 until 2016, so for 3 years, we were really rocking and rolling in that exact same direction. What we did is we upgraded our facilities. So we didn't have an office space that first year. Our office where we would cut film and where we would meet as coaches was right there in that mansion. And so 2014, our second year, we got an office space, and it was a 150, you know, square foot offices, one room, you know, like a 10 by 15 room. And, you know, that allowed for me to at least get away, have our coaches meetings. We had, you know, community conference room access. So we had our office space.
Did you rent that, Jonah, or did you buy it?
I rented that, $150 a month for okay. a 150 square foot office space. Yep. And then I upgraded our facilities. So obviously every year I would go back out and I try to find a better gym, a better full-time weight room, you know, better chiropractor, and try to find better relationships, not just financially, but also as far as the level, you know, of those facilities goes. So we changed gyms a couple times because we found better amenities, things that were logistically closer, because we didn't want to be going on this bus route every day, you know, pick the students up at the housing, take them to the gym, then take them to the weight room, then take them to the office. But that second year, things started to slow down, and we really established ourselves in Matthews. We had that one office space. We used to have the students come in and do SAT prep courses in the communal conference space. They didn't like that at all because we had 36 students. We actually tripled our enrollment our second year. And so we had 36 students coming into that conference space in three separate groups of 12, taking SAT classes with a part-time SAT teacher. And so, you know, basically we're still spread out though. You know, we've got three vans. They're going from apartment to apartment. We're now in apartments. I finally got an apartment, you know, complex to bite on us and give us seven apartments in our second year. And so, you know, so basically things just started to generate and to go well. Fast forward, you know, another year, then we opened up a 1500 square foot office space that had full-time classrooms and things of that nature. I paid this gentleman in Matthews $3,000 for 6 months for a beautiful office space, you know, parking, things of that nature. We stayed there 6 months. Then our third year, we opened up finally a legitimate facility, a 5,000 square foot commercial facility. We outfitted the back with a rubber court, some Gorilla basketball goals, a weight room, some common space, some classrooms, and actually started to legitimize what we were doing. And, you know, at that point in 16, we really felt confident that we could dive into high school student athletes and that we could actually create a high school. And it was primarily based upon our facilities. So we started to research, and we went through the process of creating an accredited school, registering with North Carolina, getting our accreditation. You know, and we did that, and it worked out pretty flawlessly, and we continued to build.
So that's where you are now, the campus that you just mentioned that you guys purchased. Actually, oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. So I'm sorry. Actually, no. So that was you know, that was 2016, 5,000 square foot, you know, building. And basically, you know, from there, we were like, listen, what can we do to blow this puppy up? At this point, we have 70 students. You know, we see it, you know, doubling, tripling, you know, every single year. The demand is there. So we have big vision for it. You know, we really wanted to model after the IMG Academy, but be the more affordable option. So
hold on.
Said, okay.
Sorry to cut you off. I just want to, like, frame this and ask you a couple questions here. So you are having success with this model, which is a model that I think a lot of prep schools have taken on, which is, you know, piece together all the different amenities, the housing, piece together the food, piece together the gyms, find a transportation and make it work. And it's profitable, but I imagine it's like super taxing. Like you said, you're going back and forth constantly between all these locations. So it's crazy, but at the same time, you guys are churning out like some pretty talented kids, and you are obviously profiting, I would imagine. But I imagine that like the lifestyle of someone running that has got to be pretty hard.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was hard on the staff, it was hard on myself, and it was hard on the students. You know, nobody wants to be on a bus or on a van every single day to all their different facilities. You know, that's why where we're at now is such a prestigious setup and such a big upgrade and so much room for growth. But yeah, it was very taxing, and it caused, you know, some customer complaints. It caused, you know, our athletes probably not to expand at the level that they could. you know, there's a bunch of prep schools out there that, that do it that way or, and way worse than the way at which we were doing it. We were the one of the most reputable and legitimate schools out there, but we absolutely didn't have that, that all-inclusive environment all in the same place. And so it was taxing. It was tough. You know, it was extremely tough, but we saw it. We had a vision for it. And so we're stacking our money away, and we're planning and we're plotting. And we got everything in order. You know, we ended up getting our high school registered in North Carolina. We ended up planning to open up baseball. We ended up planning to open up women's basketball. We ended up planning to open up all these sports for post-grad and for high school. And right at the key moment, late 2016, we started searching for different properties. And even at this point, you know, we've saved up some money, but we didn't save up enough money to go buy a campus like IMG or a campus, an old collegiate campus. You know, these things are millions of dollars, but we found a church that went out of business that was more than just a church in Lincolnton, North Carolina, about 40 minutes from downtown Charlotte, sitting on 43 acres, an option for us to buy another 25 acres, over 100,000 square feet of buildings, cafeteria, full gymnasium, dormitory, weight room, all kinds of different amenities. And so we started to evaluate that, and they started their bidding at $2.5 million. This was an asset that was in foreclosure. And, you know, at this point, you know, and we didn't reference this, but, you know, Trevor and I have built up quite a real estate portfolio. You know, him and I hold over 150 doors now nationally. We've got over $50 million in real estate assets, free and clear, undebted. And, you know, him and I have really gained knowledge and experience quickly over the years of, you know, just buying student housing. And so, so we saw this asset and we said, let's really see if we can acquire this. This would be the perfect setup for us to make Combine long-term and take it to the next level. So we ended up bidding down on that asset. They brought it down to 1.5. Well, long story short, we acquired that at pennies on the dollar, went under SBA financing, which allows for you to get up to $5 million in improvements and renovations and new buildings. It's called the Small Business Administration. And we started building new dormitory. We renovated all the current buildings to make it look less church-like. And then now we're underway. So we have this new environment, and you know, we're all excited about it. We're branding it Combine everywhere. We're still under construction to this day. We've been under construction for 2.5 years, and we'll continue to be under construction for probably the next handful of years. But it allowed for us to have the space to open up baseball, which we're doing extremely successfully now at the high school and postgraduate level, women's basketball, soccer, which are all the sports that we offer now, volleyball. And then we open up with golf and tennis in 2020. So it we took the exact same business model and really just tried to replicate it, hire genuine, you know, staff and keep it rocking and rolling.
Yeah. And I'm sure once you find that permanent location, that allows you to grow at such a faster pace and improve in all those areas that you had mentioned. And we touched on it earlier, but there's so many like prep schools that pop up all over the place all the time. And you guys, at least, you know, you guys did a good job because your kids were always fed. They always had a roof over their head. But you hear all these horror stories about prep schools where you got kids sleeping on the floor and not eating and missing meals. Like, how crazy was that prep circuit? And like, I'm sure those are the teams you're playing because you're a new prep, you know, you're a new school. At least when you first got started, you were. And you're looking for games and looking for opponents. I mean, did you come across some of that from some of the schools you played against?
Absolutely, man. I mean, more often than not, you know, because in this environment, everyone thinks they can do it. You know, they see the way it operates, and then they think, oh, this is the same as AAU, just AAU on steroids. You know, if I'm spending, you know, $2,000 in my AAU season, I might be spending $20,000 on food, you know, in my post-grad season or my prep school season. And so everybody and their brother thinks that they can do it, and they end up not being able to do it. You know, they're not fit to run a business. They're not mature. They're greedy. They're illegitimate and unprofessional. And so you end up with, you know, a stain, you know, getting placed on this industry because you've got you know, a lot of people that are trying to do it, trying to innovate, trying to be entrepreneurial, but they're not going about it the right way. And like you said, I mean, a lot of inhumane types of environments, like, you know, students sleeping on the floor, you know, eating ramen noodles every night. You'd be amazed at some of the things that occur at some schools that whenever you watch them play and you see their jerseys, you think, oh, wow, they're legitimate. But then they go back to a shack, you know, and all the students are getting sick and they're jam packed, you know, in these housings like sardines, and, you know, and the staff is using all the money for their personal gain. And it's just, you know, it's a nightmare at some of these institutions, which easily allowed for us to set ourselves apart by hiring former college coaches, doing things the right way, budgeting properly, you know, being sharp. You know, we made our mistakes, many of them, and especially in the beginning years when it was a grind and when we had to, you know, make exceptions, but never on the same level as some of these environments, for sure.
How do you balance? Because it seems like there's two models with these prep schools. There's prep schools that find kids to pay, you know, full tuition, which, you know, is somewhere between, I don't know, every school's different, but, you know, somewhere between $10,000 and $30,000. And then there's also like other programs that go out and get super talented kids that want to build their reputation off of, you know, where they're placing their talent. How do you find that balance? Because you guys certainly have put out plenty of talented dudes over the years, and I'm sure dozens of Division I players and even more, you know, small college players. But how do you find that balance between making money, finding kids that'll pay, and still like having talented dudes on your team?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. You know, initially in our first year, you know, we offered one full ride scholarship. And so that allowed for us to have at least one student that we knew would be locked in at the Division I level. We had to assure that he was eligible. And then the rest of the slots were for the budget. But over the years, every year that we've changed and that we've, you know, switched facilities and transitioned, that budget always changes. So every year we'd have to analyze our financials, our expenditures, our overhead. And then we'd have to say, okay, this is how much profit we're going to make. If we're going to make $100,000 in year three in profit, that's not a lot of money on a $500,000 revenue generating business. That's 20% margins. But we would have to say to ourselves, you know, what does it look like if we give one full $12,000 scholarship? What does it look like if we give three full $12,000 scholarships? Do we have a buffer there? And then it's just risk reward. And so we would look at it and we would say, okay, this is the maximum amount of full scholarships that we can give. If we find athletes that fit within our criteria that are going to go to the high major or mid major level and really help our marketability and help our talent level and our competitiveness, then we'll move forward with it. But if we don't find someone that meets that criteria, we'll fill that slot with a paying customer. But it all came down to data, Adam. You know, we had to basically analyze the budget, look at, you know, how much money we were going to make, and then how much money we'd be willing to sacrifice on bringing in talent. Because what that did is allowed for us to propel and gain notoriety, you know, have, you know, players placed at the college level, playing on TV, that allowed for us to have an even better enrollment the next year. And so, you know, I think that's where a lot of people fall mistaken. You know, a lot of these former AAU coaches that start prep schools and guys that, you know, just out of nowhere that start these new organizations, you know, they either go all talent and no one's paying anything because they want to win so bad, or they don't have any talent at all, and they can't even be competitive, and then all the students are upset and they're only in it for financial gain. But really it was just evaluating those numbers and then looking at, you know, what we needed per team.
Yeah, and I'd say you guys also do a tremendous job of, you know, making sure that the kids that are paying, maybe they're not paying the full amount, but they're still pretty good. Like you found some people that you've been able to get on your staff and under the Combine umbrella that do a pretty good job evaluating and recruiting to the program.
For sure, for sure. I mean, that's most important. We operate almost identically to the college level. You know, the coaches that we bring in, we look at them as long-term. We want them to be extremely experienced in evaluation and recruiting and in coaching and college placement. And so we bring them in and we explain, you know, this is the sales pitch. You know, this is what we offer. You know, if they pay $13,000 to attend Combine Academy, that very much likely is going to turn into a $150,000 collegiate 4-year scholarship. And, you know, you can't tell that to everyone. You know, you can't tell that to Johnny, who can barely, you know, dribble with his eyes open. But you can tell that, you know, to the student athletes that are going to be investing in you that actually have that great potential. And, you know, we've had endless amounts of students that have paid $10,000 plus that come to us and that are Division I talent and then move on, you know, to the Division I level and saw it as an actual investment. You know how many diamonds, you know, in the rough there are, how many underexposed student athletes there are. We like to go out and find those kids that need the opportunity or are willing to invest in it and then come to us and we blow them up. You know, Archer Labinowitz that just beat Kentucky at University of Evansville, he had no offers coming out of Butler High School, a really reputable high school in Charlotte. And he had zero offers, Division I, Division II, NAIA, Division III, nothing. And he came to us for a post-grad year. We pumped him like crazy and sent him to the Division I level on a full-ride scholarship. He paid for his opportunity with us, but we, 12X'd his money in his financial aid at the next level.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And I know you got a lot of stories of kids like that that have come and two-year program with no offers and have left with multiple Division I offers on the table. It sounds like where you guys really took the leap and separated yourself is at some point you went from renting student housing to buying student housing. Is that accurate to say that? Because that's really, you know, you talk about your venture capitalist firm, J.B. Fitzgerald, and you know, all the properties that you guys own. That's, I would imagine, one of your biggest revenue streams is all the real estate that you guys have. Is that how it got started? Is by purchasing some of the student housing that you used?
It is. So 2014, whenever we tripled that enrollment, we bought our first ever multifamily property. We bought a quadplex. And, you know, that couldn't cover all of our students. We had 37 students that year, that second year. The overflow, we put in apartments. So we owned about half of our housing. And, you know, that transaction, Trevor and I didn't have a clue. You know, we didn't know what a due diligence fee was or what earnest money was or an inspection, appraisal, all these terms that you know, we're fluent in now. But in our first transaction, we learned and we saw what that did for us, because obviously the mortgage on that was much less than that of us paying, you know, a short-term lease, which was going to have an escalated value because it was a short-term lease. And so for us, we saw what it did, and we really doubled down on that ideology of let's buy single-family homes near our gym, near our office space. And let's stage them, you know, so that our students can come at any point and visit and see the amenities, see the exact bed they'll be sleeping in, and get more comfortable. So we started doing that at a rapid pace after we saw what it did for us in 2014. In 2015, we bought about a dozen properties, and we staged those and really threw, you know, gasoline on our business. In 2016, we acquired near 50 properties. And that also allowed for us to get experience and passive investing just as an investor, you know, outside of student housing. But that was definitely the biggest separator and the thing that separated us and got us to the next level for sure.
Is that something you would recommend other startup prep schools doing, or is that something that you can only do if you have, you know, a certain amount of built up capital to put into it? Like your first single family home that you bought, I'm sure wasn't like a multi-million dollar house, I would guess.
Of course. Yeah, no, correct. And so, you know, I wouldn't advise, it depends on the operator, the owner operator, you know, it depends on them. You know, so many prep schools are one and done, you know, and there's a theme in the industry that you don't schedule a game with a first year prep school. And so, you know, we had a first year prep school with multiple Division I players the other day that canceled on us the day of the game, coming from Ohio, and said, we just can't make it. You know, we don't have it in our budget. And, you know, we had already pre-sold some tickets, and it's ridiculous, you know, honestly. But You know, it depends. You know, I would advise it if it's somebody that's very sharp and organized and has the ability to do that. You know, what really helped us is we had a crutch. You know, Trevor was bringing in big time W-2 wages in the NBA. It wouldn't have been possible for us to fuel our real estate if it wasn't for not his income, but his pay stubs, right? So Trevor's never put a dime into Combine Academy until we got to a certain state. So the first 4 years, you know, it was all just reinvested capital that we gained. But what he was able to do is sign on to some of the loans that we created by offering his pay stubs and showing, this is my debt to income ratio, this is, you know, my due diligence materials, you know. And so we went through underwriting, and having him made it very easy for us to acquire assets at a quicker pace.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's such a great distinction between like actually putting money into it compared to like just using your W-2s to get money out of the banks, because that is such a huge advantage. You guys really have put a ton of resources into you know, what Combine Academy is now, which is the campus, which is the various sports, the coaches that you guys have hired. You guys just hired Jeff McGinnis this year, and now your high school team, I believe, is, I don't know if you're ranked, but you've knocked off Oak Hill. You guys are the real deal, and certainly making some noise at that elite high school level as well, in addition to the prep, which is what you guys got started with.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Adam. Quick shout out. Yeah, we're ranked 35th in the country right now, but those rankings came out after our first game only. So we're now currently 5-0. We beat Oak Hill Academy in our first game of the year. Second game of the year, we beat a really, really good quality education team. We beat the Burlington School, who's ranked, they were ranked third in the state of North Carolina. We went on to beat the International School in Ohio. And then last night, we beat another really good program, Franklin Prep. And so rankings haven't come back out, but we have a huge game on Friday against Moravian Prep. It's basically the Battle of North Carolina on Friday, tomorrow evening, 9 p.m. Whoever wins this game is going to be ranked first in the state and top 20 in the country. So it's super exciting. I'm hoping we pull it out. But regardless of the outcome, I'm very, very, very excited and proud of what Coach McGinnis, the rest of our staff have accomplished with this young recruiting class. Got a couple of top 25 players, and it's definitely taken off. All the hard work's paying off, so I appreciate you referencing that.
Yeah, big game with Moravian Prep. Jeremy Ellis, another guy that comes back to the Clemson area. It all comes back
to it. Exactly.
Well, Jonah, I appreciate it, man. You guys always I do want to talk about this before I let you go. You guys, how many teams do you have there at Combine right now, basketball teams?
So right now we have two high school teams, a national and a regional high school team. We've got three postgraduate teams, a national postgraduate team, and two regional postgraduate teams. So five total basketball teams and one baseball team. And then we've got, you know, soccer, volleyball, women's basketball, all those other entities as well.
You guys in the summer, I believe you still do this, have several AAU teams as well. The point that I'm getting to is you guys constantly are in need of coaches, and it's an unbelievable opportunity for somebody, whether you're just getting into the business, maybe you just finished your GA spot, whatever your situation is, if you want hands-on experience, Combine is always hiring. You may not become rich doing it, but so much experience, and you'll get to work with tremendous talent, tremendous facilities. It's a great opportunity. If people are interested in jumping on board, is that something they should reach out? You know, what should they
absolutely
do, Jonah?
Yeah, absolutely. Jonah@combineacademy.com. That's the email, and our application is very accessible on our website. But like you said, always hiring, always developing. We've got a big AAU franchise in the off season, all of our coaches work with our pro clientele. We've got one of the biggest pro training camps in the United States, NBA players, EuroLeague players, everyone coming and flocking to our campus to get, you know, the all-inclusive aspects of training, sports medicine, sports performance, on-court development. And, you know, it's definitely a diverse experience that one could obtain by coming here and putting out tremendous effort as a new staff member.
Well, Jonah, thanks again, man. I'm proud of you. I admire what you've done and your daringness to take a leap and do something as ambitious as you've done. And obviously you've been reaping the rewards for years, but to see, you know, the notoriety that you guys are gaining now and the traction you're gaining now that you have the campus and your high school team is making noise and your guys are going on to beat Kentucky on national TV, is really fun to see. So, again, happy for you, Jonah, and appreciate you.
Absolutely, absolutely, and happy for you guys as well. And thanks for everything that you guys have always done for us, Adam. It's obviously always indebted. Absolutely. So thanks a bunch. Go Goats.